Hello and welcome to Tantrum Hour Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, on the traditional and unceded lands of the Mi'kmaq people. I'm Erica Butler. It's Wednesday, October 27th. Coming up on today's show...
At some point, we got to be bold and think in bold strokes, not in the fiddly itty-bitty little things.
That's Sackville Town Councillor Sabine Dietz, who we'll hear from later on in today's show. Dietz has made a proposal to town staff and council for some changes to the budget for 2022 that would see the town put more of a focus on tackling the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions and risks associated with climate change. That interview is coming up right after this local news and information. Westcock residents got a surprise Tuesday morning after CN put up a sign warning that the railway crossing at Wood Point Road leading into Westcock would be closed all day Thursday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. The closed crossing will mean a detour of up to 50 kilometers for residents of Westcock, British Settlement, Wood Point, and beyond. Resident Patty Steele posted a picture of the sign on social media and concerns poured in from residents whose daily travel will be affected. CN spokesperson Mathieu Gaudreau says the company is rehabilitating the crossing, including the crossing surface. Gaudreau also said the company was in contact with the town of Sackville and local emergency services to ensure that the impacted citizens and services can plan accordingly. A New Brunswick CN source says that the railway has received many complaints about the crossing service. That and the need for some work on the rails on either side of the crossing made the closure necessary. Some people may be able to cross on foot during the closure, as long as safety is not an issue at the time, says the CN worker. The downtown Sackville Canada Post branch has been having a hard time staying open recently. Canada Post spokesperson Eunice Machuhi says the post office is already on reduced hours due to COVID-19 concerns and because of a staff shortage. But even those reduced hours, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday to Friday, have not been manageable some days at Sackville's main post office. CHMA has heard from listeners who keep finding locked doors before the posted closing hours. Machuhi acknowledges that early closures happened on several occasions last month. Machuhi says the post office is operating with limited staff, though the Crown Corporation is in the process of hiring and training employees who should be on board in the coming weeks. There are no current job postings for the Sackville branch listed on the Canada Post website. Machuhi points out that those with post boxes at the Main Street location can access the site if they have purchased an access key. There are also full postal services available at Hurdles Variety in Middle Sackville 7 days a week from 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Machuhi apologizes for the temporary disruption and inconvenience to customers and says Canada Post is working towards resuming regular business hours as soon as possible. Sackville kids are headed for another COVID-19 Halloween this Sunday night, and the jury's still out on exactly what that will mean. The province released its guidelines last weekend asking that kids in circuit breaker areas wear a mask, not the scary kind, and follow the one household rule when going outside trick-or-treating. For the rest of the province, the guidelines ask that kids stay in their household plus 20 bubbles while collecting candy and showing off their costumes. Sackville's circuit breaker status was extended last week until this Friday, and so the specific guidelines for Sackville kids will depend on whether the province extends it again later this week. We'll keep you posted. In the meantime, check chmafm.com for more details on the guidelines. For the first time in 2 weeks, the province reported no new deaths from COVID-19, and there's more good news. Tuesday marked the second day of daily new case counts in the low 20s. Just 21 new cases were reported on Tuesday, with 2 new cases in Zone 1. But still rather worrying is the fact that the origins of all 21 cases reported Tuesday are still under investigation, meaning the new cases were not already known to be close contacts of previous cases or had recently traveled. Rapid test kits are being distributed today in Port Elgin in the parking lot beside Victoria Park. The Horizon van will be there from 10 a.m. until 2:30 p.m., or until they run out of test kits. On Tuesday, the van was parked at the Tantramar Veterans Memorial Civic Center for the morning, handing out kits to a steady stream of people in cars, on bikes, and walking. And just before we get to today's feature interview with Sackville Town Councillor Sabine Dietz, in the upcoming events department, it's opening night for the Performers Theatre Company as they bring The Book of Darkness and Light to stage for the first time in North America. The play is a collection of three ghost stories written by UK playwright Adam Robinson, which reviewers have called astoundingly unsettling and creepy and captivating. More information is available at performerstheatre.ca. Councillor Sabine Dietz wants the town of Sackville to set its sights a little higher in terms of reducing greenhouse gases and building infrastructure to withstand the increased risks associated with climate change. The new councillor ran on a platform of responding to the climate crisis, and at Monday's council meeting, proposed changes to the town's 2022 budget to do just that. I called up Sabine Dietz Tuesday to hear more about her proposal. Councillor Sabine Dietz, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So on Monday evening, you had a chance to ask some questions about the town's proposed budget and give some feedback. You had a fair amount to say, and I want to get, first of all, your overall impression of this year's proposed budget. What were some of the sort of the themes that you felt were missing, let's say?
Yeah, well, maybe just to start, overall feel of the budget. I think, you know, I know how much time goes into setting a budget and then, you know, reflecting sort of the needs of the community and of our infrastructure and just the needs that are out there that we can't shirk, right? So I think that was all there. And, you know, as I mentioned in my comments yesterday and in my notes, the missing piece is when you do set a budget, really you reflect the priorities of a community for the next year. And so, yes, it's next year, but it's also looking at the future, because everything that we do in terms of making decisions to, you know, pave a street or buy a big piece of equipment, all of that has long-term impacts, both on our finances, but also on what we need to do down the road to maintain those kind of pieces of equipment or infrastructure. So it's really, really hard to step outside that and look at the bigger picture, you know, what's going on in the world, what might actually impact our small municipality. And, you know, those kind of considerations are not really, this is really not the role of a budget, but I do believe it's the role of councillors. So when I say not the role of budget, but not the role of staff, but it's the role of councillors to do that scanning of the horizon or the larger picture, the larger changes that happen that will definitely have an impact on the decisions we need to make. And so that piece was necessarily missing. We've never done that. It's really hard to do. And I don't really know many municipalities that do that. Mm-hmm. But it's becoming increasingly important, right? And the other piece really is that piece about climate change. You know, we've talked about climate change, both you know, our emissions, we've talked about adaptation, so the impacts, having to deal with the impacts such as flooding. We've talked about this for so long. And Sackville is so, so far ahead, and we've done so, so much. But the urgency didn't get reflected in the budget. You know, the whole idea of applying a climate lens wasn't really reflected in setting up the budget. Anyway, not from just that presentation that we had, right? I know staff think a lot about these things, but we also know that there's very limited capacity to actually reflect on these kind of considerations. You know, will my project have a negative impact or increase greenhouse gas emissions, and how does that happen? How will we offset that? What is our goal? You know, if our goal is to reduce our emissions as far as possible, then we should think about these things. If our goal is to make sure that we don't increase risks, such as increased risk from flooding, then we should make sure we do that during our considerations for what we're planning for the next year or couple years.
What now? One of the ideas that you've suggested is creating an annual allocation or a fund that would be used to make, if I'm understanding it correctly, that would be used to make adjustments to other projects throughout the year to make sure they were as climate friendly as possible.
Exactly.
So yeah. It's a pool of money that's there to help make sure that the rest of the budget is as climate friendly. You've got some ideas on where that money, the fund for that money, might come from, but let's start with what it might get spent on. What kind of things do you imagine? And obviously you haven't laid this all out, because you're calling it a contingency fund because you want it to be flexible. But how do you picture this fund working throughout the budget year? What kind of projects could it help change?
let's say there is a plan to do some patching or paving of one road or reconstruction of one road. It has to be switched in the middle of the year. The money is still allocated for the construction piece. Something changes, or even an original project, and staff didn't have the time or the opportunity or the capacity to reflect on climate change, which is a lot of stuff that we're currently doing. Hasn't had the opportunity to be looked at with a climate lens, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just the way it is. And so there's projects there that I don't even know about, because we're really look at the course budget, really the overall budget and amounts above a certain amount, right? But there will be things going on that where staff, in coordination with the climate change coordinator or the mayor's round table or the climate change advisory committee, we'll figure out that, well, if we change this one thing, we will actually improve or reduce greenhouse gas emissions as that result from this one project. Or we can add something that will actually encourage reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. So a good example would be, let's say one of the streets get paved. So paving an entire street instead of patching is good for greenhouse gas emissions. It reduces them in the long term. Paving new streets is bad for greenhouse gas emissions, because that's a really high cost. So let's say we're doing that and we didn't have an EV charger currently in the budget, right? But, you know, there is some sort of rough calculation saying that, wow, you know, we're just increased our greenhouse gas emissions by, you know, 20 tons just by doing this one project. What can we do? We didn't think about this beforehand. We didn't realize, you know, it would cost us in greenhouse gas emissions that much. What can we do to offset that? And so this fund is really sort of a stopgap measure for now, until we can all look at these kind of projects and work through a climate lens. And so, you know, it's meant to supplement as well when something gets more expensive, because you know, it's very clear once this budget is set, staff can say, you gave us a budget of $20,000 to do this. If you want us to incorporate a climate change aspect in it, it'll cost $5,000 or $10,000 more. So currently, we have nothing set up to actually make that switch and be able to say, without problems in other areas of the budget, we can't do that, right? It takes a lot of wiggle room. And, you know, it's not that simple to switch things around. So with a contingency fund, staff will be able to come forward and say, look, we got this extra expense for $10,000 because, you know, we looked at it with a climate lens, and this is what we're proposing. Then council can say, yep, we allow you to allocate and use $10,000 of the contingency fund for this. Okay. So it gives us a bit of flexibility to actually start switching some of our work over to considering climate change in the impact that any kind of work that we do has, mm-hmm. and then mitigating that.
It seems like a certain amount of it would almost depend on us having a bit of an accounting of where, you know, where our investments are causing more emissions and where they are reducing emissions.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I mean, that is possible. You know, there's a lot of ways that greenhouse gas emissions accounting can be done. So there's tools out there that can be used for it. When you just scan sort of greenhouse gas emissions calculator or footprint calculator, you can get a lot of various tools. But it takes research to do this. And so, you know, I am hoping that with a climate change coordinator, that work can be helped along, so that maybe, and, you know, I'm not saying that's the way it'll go, but maybe staff will go to the climate change coordinator and say, okay, I've got this project, and I'm pretty sure this piece of the project actually increases our greenhouse gas emissions. Can you check what it actually does? So paving is a really good example, right? There's research out there. There's some research that's pretty clear on the greenhouse gas emissions per paved kilometer or meter or whatever it is. So, but it is time. It is the time that's involved in compiling all of this. And yes, it will be likely in the first couple of years, it'll be a bit haphazard, but with the help of a climate change coordinator, I'm almost sure that we'll get a pretty good picture on both sides of the equation. On the one hand, you know, what has been our greenhouse gas emissions cost on one side, and what have we offset with this other kind of work on the other side, and how do we actually come out at the end of the year? What's our final sort of net greenhouse gas emissions that we've actually cost or actually saved during this 1 year, just by the work that we're doing. I mean, it's way more complicated because we, of course, also have just the regular operations that a community has, you know, operating a town hall, operating the rec center. And sort of all of that is, again, separate. And all of that is being accounted in any case because, you know, SACWA is part of the Partners for Climate Protection, which does that kind of work, which helps do that kind of work. So we're not out in the cold there. We're not doing something that's never been done, but it takes capacity and effort to do that, to actually build that, and then to build internally the capacity to think things through and, you know, be aware of where are those greenhouse gas emissions, where are those risks when we do something like paving a street instead of putting down gravel? Mm-hmm. What are the risks associated with that, right?
Let's talk about that climate change coordinator position for a bit. Kirsty Mrazek is the name of the new climate change coordinator. Now, Kirsty is working for EOS. This is a funding that the town of Sackville got, but the employment contract is with EOS. But mm-hmm. She's the town of Sackville climate change coordinator. You have made the point that this is a temporary position as well, very temporary, because of the way provincial government funding works, the agreements didn't even get signed before it was, you know, like 6 months left to sort of spend the money. So we're looking at, and I know EOS is trying to extend that as much as possible. You make the argument that this should be either a longer term or permanent position. Should it also be a town of Sackville staff position, or is it okay that this is a person working for an NGO?
Yeah, so this is not a categorical yes or no. So the relationship between the town and EOS Eco Energy is really superb. It's a really good relationship. And I should say that as far as I understand, EOS has actually succeeded in extending the funding beyond the provincial funding that the town had secured. So there mm-hmm. there is funding there, from what I understand, until the fall next year. So it's not quite a year, so it doesn't bring us up to the end of 2022, but it is longer than just March 31st, which is really the short term. So that's just one thing that I wanted to just say. And EOS Eco Energy is doing a lot of work in the climate field already. So, but I also know that she will be very heavily involved in all of stuff that the town does, because there, you know, the town has a we council plus staff have a vested interest in having her work on town interests, and that was the intent. And so I totally trust that this relationship and this partnership is going to work really well. It will work out really well for the town. Mm-hmm. So that's the one thing. But on the other thing, on the other hand, you know, I am convinced, and I know how difficult this is, increasing staffing in a municipality. We always get accused, I think, of overstaffing, and yet I have no idea how you get work done without people. They're, I think, the key to making our communities livable. I'm sorry, but that's just a fact. So, but it's really hard to get new staff on. And I understand that because it's quite a chunk of money. But I'm also convinced, you know, when you look forward to the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, there is so much that we as a municipality need to take into consideration, we need to do. We're being forced, basically, and, you know, this is, it sounds terrible, but we are being forced by world decisions to make changes on the ground, at the ground level. So a good example is the whole idea of electrification. It will trickle down to us. I mean, if we buy equipment that will last 20, 30 years, and we're not considering the reality of the requirement to electrify our fleets, then we're negligent. But at the same time, you know, this is not going to go away. This needs to reflect, to keep track of, and then to trickle all of this information, all of the opportunities, all of the risks, all of the possibilities down into the entire government of a municipality. We need that capacity, and capacity comes with individuals that have the training and the skills and the understanding and the knowledge of these specific subjects, so the entire climate change field, right? And so I don't see any other way than having somebody who's actually dedicated to do this. It may have been 10 years ago, I would have probably said, no, it's okay. You know, the town collaborates so much already, just continue collaboration. I don't see this as a future for municipalities. I know Moncton just hired a climate change coordinator. Now, you may say, well, that's a huge municipality. Yes, but they've also had a lot of investment actually in climate action already. And, you know, it's for us as a municipality, having the capacity to address our own risks that are coming, to better understand them, to actually make decisions based on evidence. That means we do need that internal capacity to help in the decision-making process, to help understand the realities around us, to help understand change that we face and that we need to deal with.
Mm-hmm. So you would like to see that eventually become like a permanent position of town, like we have
absolutely.
We have a manager of business development.
I mean
that's obviously at some point someone decided that was a priority. We needed someone working full time on this, and a manager no less. So I guess you're making the case for this is an area of expertise that we need someone working in.
Yeah, absolutely.
I should let you go. We're running out of time here. It's a complex proposal, what you've put forward, and we'll be discussing it more, you know, as time goes on. Do you have a hope that this will be well received by your council colleagues? You're going to need council support for this to sort of be able to move forward. You'll also need, I think, the cooperation of staff people involved to be willing to sort of, at this point in the budget process, to be able to incorporate it and make those changes that you've suggested. How do you feel about it?
When I thought about what I would do with this budget, with my thinking about it, I almost didn't do this. And then I thought, well, why not? This is, at some point, we got to be bold and think in bold strokes, not in the fiddly itty bitty little things. And so, I am hoping there will be support, but I'm also realistic that we have a lot of pressures on us as a municipal government. And I don't know whether, I'm always hoping that, the thinking goes a bit beyond the near term and goes beyond, doing things just right now for paving and for, you know, I'm really bad mouthing paving today. I don't know why it's on the top of my head. We need the streets drivable. I don't deny that. It's almost like a now or never, we got to start. And whether we start now and give ourselves the time to build it up, or in 4 or 5 years, we're put in front of an almost insurmountable wall of having to do things that we're not prepared to do because we haven't built up the capacity. I think it would be smart to be able to incorporate much of what I propose. It doesn't have to be exactly like that. It can be, you know, different figures. It can be different ways of doing it. But really, my ask isn't all that huge. I mean, when you read through it, I don't think it's that big. We do have an opportunity this year, especially with, you know, the increase in our assessment values and the sort of leftover from this year's gas tax fund, to do a little bit of a bold thing. Mm-hmm. And I know that this community is thinking bold. It's not thinking in small, you know, let's do a little piece of something. This community does want change. And so I think us as a council and as a town, we should act on that. And you know, that change that I'm suggesting in terms of the budget is a minuscule piece of the overall budget, but it reflects a profound agreement that, yes, we're taking climate change seriously. Yes, we need to start incorporating it. Yes, we need to invest a bit because we need to give ourselves the time to build our own capacity to use this kind of lens in our own thinking and then in our decision making and then in our operations. Mm-hmm. So I am hopeful.
All right. Ever hopeful, Councillor Dietz. Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. Have a great day. Thanks for your
time. Thanks, Erica.
That was Sackville Town Councillor Sabine Dietz. Dietz's proposal followed a presentation from three representatives from the Mayor's Roundtable on Climate Change. Barb Clayton, Richard Elliott, and Kirsty Mrazek were at Monday's council meeting to share their feedback on the budget after having looked at it through the roundtable's climate lens. The trio has a list of specific requests to nudge Sackville farther along to climate-responsible operations, along with four overarching policy recommendations. The trio suggested that the town formalize their commitment to electrifying their vehicle fleet, to everything from the car being purchased next year for use by the bylaw officer, to the Zamboni being purchased for 2023. They also asked for all town staff to attend climate change awareness sessions, and for the town to more proactively promote and highlight their climate-friendly efforts. The trio has also asked the town to reprofile the spending for what it calls the gas tax fund, which is now dubbed the Canada Community Building Fund by the federal government. This year, the town of Sackville is receiving more than usual in the gas tax fund, just over $750,000. Typically, the town uses the full fund for roadwork and makes the point that by doing so, other funds in the budget are freed up for other priorities. But the Mayor's Roundtable on Climate Change is asking the town to reverse that strategy and use gas tax funding for sustainable community initiatives or green infrastructure, or to help make other capital projects more emissions-proof. Road work, it proposes, should be funded elsewhere in the town budget. Sackville Town Council will meet again on Monday, November 1st. This is a special council meeting for discussion only. Town staff will decide between now and then what components of either Dietz's proposal or the Mayor's Roundtable recommendations will make it into their proposed budget. Council will be asked to approve a budget at their regular meeting on November 8th. That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Wednesday, October 27th. As always, we hope you will get in touch with your comments or questions at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.